online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everyone, to Sundog, the podcast, the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of the show, we'll give you something to think about that'll help improve your company's bottom line. This is episode number 20. We're going to be calling it Make My Logo Better. With us today are three members from the creative team on Sixth Floor. We'll start with Mr. Eric Ista.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing A-OK.
Welcome back. We've been sort of in the podcast nether regions here for a while, so it's nice to get back on the air again.
Yes.
Sitting next to Eric is Shannon Lunny.
Hello there.
How you been?
Great.
What you been up to?
Just working.
Just working.
Doing the work thing. Moving. Okay. Moved into a small room.
How's
apartment.
Your
band's great. Just kidding. Sore subject. I don't want to talk about it.
We might go there later if we need a diversion. And rounding out the panel today is our newest member, Mr. Nick Green.
Hey there.
How you been?
Good.
That's cool. Well, what we're going to do today is talk about logo design. We got three of the best in town sitting right in front of me. So the first question I have to the panel is, when you get a project from a client that says, I want either a new logo or a redesign of my current one, what are some of the questions you immediately think of to ask?
Well, first of all, you know, what's the style of the car? What's the feel of the company? You know, I mean, is it, you kind of get that just based on what sort of company they have, but, you know, it's not just the, I guess the field of business that they're in I can't think of words today. But it has a lot to do with the personality of the people too. I mean, two different banks can have two very different style logos. I mean, if it's a, hey, we're a crazy, wacky bank, you know, I mean, if they're not very corporate, then they probably won't have a very corporate logo. So it's not just the business. It's a word I'm thinking of.
Just their identity or their brand identity overall. I mean, a lot of people will say, you know, here's the logo, that's their brand. No, that's not their brand. That's a major part of their brand, but it's just a visual representation of the company.
Excuse me, I choked because I got so excited. Category. Oh. That's there we go. Yay.
So we've been off the air for 3 months.
Okay. Getting back into it here. No, I mean, what I'm talking about, you know, are you a bank? Are you a construction company? Are you an ad agency? You know, what sort of category do you fall in? And, you know, that certainly has a reflection on what style the logo is. But then, like I said, it's also has to do with just the personality of the company overall, too.
I think that even in that case, spending some time with the company and with some people in the company, you really get a feel for the company and for how the logo is going to be, because you get, I don't know, you understand their brand and how they are, and that really helps with the logo design too. That's a really important part.
There's definitely a lot that goes with youth, even just because right now we have a lot of different kinds of logos that are going out there with photorealism, that are going out there with shines and shadows, all those different type of things that don't necessarily travel from media to media. And so kind of realizing whether or not a shiny poppy new logo is going to be well, because they're going to have a brand makeover in 3 years as part of that youth culture that they have, is going to be huge. And realizing whether they're going to have to do a low-res version as well.
Definitely the thing you have to take into consideration is, where is this logo going to live most of the time? You know, the new sort of web, you know, companies that typically just operate with an online universe, they might not be making golf balls with their logo on it. And I know that's something that I've run into before too. I mean, I had just a fantastic logo, and somebody in the room said, "Well, what's that going to look like on a golf ball?" Well, if you were in the business of manufacturing golf balls, I would be concerned about that. But there's always a way around things. There's, you know, when we create a logo, we take into consideration the simpler one color applications, things like that, and you can simplify that stuff down. There's no impossibilities. But thinking the majority of the time, where is that logo going to live? How is it going to operate? And how does it reflect on you? Because you don't want to just a flat one color logo that's going to work on a golf ball and pop that on the web. I mean, that's, you know, if you're competing with other companies that do the majority of their business online, chances are they're going to, like you said, Nick, have a lot poppier logos and with the cool shines and glows and shadows and reflections and every other filter in Photoshop.
My own personal rule of thumb is it's got to look good on a shirt.
Yeah.
Because if you can get it down to that and get it so the embroidery machine can you know, replicate that thing almost perfectly. And so when you're out and about and you're mixing it up with customers, and I sound like you're fighting with customers. When you're, how about meeting with customers? Let's go with that. You know, you're meeting with customers and other members of the public, and you know, you don't want them to all of a sudden be staring at your shirt and they're trying to figure out, is that an E or an O? If it's clean and they can see it from, you know, 3 feet back easily without squinting, you pretty much did your job. In my book anyway.
Right. A lot of times you have to cheat a little bit on stuff like that because embroidery is such a unwieldy beast, you know, trying to recreate things. So you have to make things a little bigger, smaller, whatever can.
Nick, you brought up a good point earlier about you know, clients coming in and they say, you know, they want something that's shiny and maybe has a curve to it, and you know, they're basically telling you this because that's what they're seeing. They're following these trends, and that's a very bad place to get in right away, is just to say, okay, yeah, we can do that. We'll make you a nice trendy logo, but you know, man, and then as Eric said, you know, what is it going to do for you? 5 years down the road, we're going to be back here again. So if you hear a client say that, I want a logo that, you know, that looks kind of like these companies, they're doing these type of styles, do you automatically think in your head, you know, we got to have them take a step back and rethink this a little bit?
I think not necessarily. A lot of times there's brands and there's companies out there that are going to change their aesthetic rather frequently. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it could be every 3 years with a lot of companies. And I feel like, or those companies where they are playing in a very dynamic atmosphere where they can change their brand identity, where they're mainly online, having something that goes with current trends is maybe going to be, in the short run, a large enough gain that the all the pain and hassle of doing a new brand identity 3-5 years down the line won't be that bad when you can hop on current trends that way.
And I think, too, it's just kind of taking your basic logo, one you've had designed, and then kind of just updating it or giving it a refresh. I know a lot of companies have done that recently. AT&T did it, like Holiday Inn has done it. Just kind of taking the logo and just giving it a refresh so people still understand, they still can recognize it, but it's kind of just bringing in the trends and stuff, you know, giving it a shine. And I know a lot of that stuff is different too, depending on where you're using it. Like on the web, you could give a logo a shine, give it a shadow, but maybe that's not going to work best on a shirt, but it doesn't necessarily have to be on the shirt. I mean, you can kind of just play around with the different, you know, as long as the main logo still looks the same, it's still going to work that way.
Does every logo need a mark?
As in an icon?
Yeah.
Type thing?
Yeah, like the Nike swoosh.
No.
What are the benefits, detriments to it?
Benefits are definitely that you can use that mark then later on in other material as a design element. So you can really tailor print pieces, online pieces, you know, everything sort of takes on that feel of what you have. But you can also do that with colors and fonts and things like that. But that's one thing that I do like using icons. I do find it to be very helpful because it is such an easy tie back to who the company is, and you can use it in patterns and whatever else, other little extra design elements that you want to kind of dress things up a little bit, and then it always belongs to that company. Then it's not like you know, using just a straight gradient or something that somebody else might be using as well.
In your opinion, does a mark tell more about a company than the typeface that goes with it?
It can. I've also seen marks that are so confusing that you don't know really what it means. So maybe you should say a well-designed mark or a well-thought-out mark. Yes, it can really tell a good story as opposed to, and, you know, just naming overall, some, you know, there's just so many different companies out there, and it's like we're running out of names, so people have to make stuff up.
Yeah.
Just use things that don't necessarily say what the company does. So that's, you know, one way around that is that you can name it with more of a unique name, mm-hmm. But then use your mark or icon to sort of convey the story of what it does.
Yeah, I think a lot of that also plays partially almost a novelty. I mean, if you look at to a lot of business-to-business companies, what you're going to be seeing is a whole lot of word marks and not a whole lot of icons. Just once again, they are the name is what's going to be carrying on from person to person, what's going to be being spread by mouth to mouth or even by emails, so mm-hmm. that actual icon sort of takes on a much lesser role,
mm-hmm.
it seems like, in those settings. And also, I think a lot of times the icon can become a great design element, but on the other end of the side of things, when you're able just to signify something by a single letter, it feels like it's a much stronger brand, that it's that much more ingrained in the person. I had a professor once who ran us through, I think it was somewhere around, I want to say like 52 different letters, mm-hmm. and everybody in the room was able to immediately say that that's the J from Jif or that's the K from Nike.
Right.
You know, and I think there's a huge amount to be said for the fact that each individual letter, particularly when you don't just go with a font, but you spend the time to actually tweak the fonts that you start off with, mm-hmm. can really hold just as much weight.
Well, what I find interesting is cases where you're essentially just buying a logo, you know, like the clothing industry, most of all. You know,
it's
Abercrombie and Fitch, but their design basically entails mm-hmm. putting their logo on clothes.
Yeah. And talk about an industry that will change their logo in a heartbeat just to follow yeah. whatever the fashion trend mm-hmm. is too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like Tommy Hilfiger too. I mean,
Echo, you know, yeah.
half of that stuff, the colors are based on the logo. I mean, it's just covered in the logo. And so, yeah, really when you're, mm-hmm. when you're buying that piece of clothing, you're buying the logo, you know?
And even just like, other brands, I know I'm guilty of this too, but like North Face, I mean, you could find probably the same type of coat, but that little logo being on there, I mean, it'll go up $100 and I'll buy it. It's terrible.
You're such a sheep.
I know.
One of my most memorable logo experiences, there is such a thing, the 2008 Masters. That I can't remember what hole it was, but Tiger Woods had this incredible pitch onto the green. He sunk it, and the camera was zoomed in all the way tight on the ball just as it was rolling into the cup. And just, you know, it approached the cup, the ball rolled up, and it just kind of hung there for a second. And of course, what was on the ball? The Nike swoosh.
Yep.
You know, man, they could not buy anything better than that. That, you know, going back to our discussions about, you know, how valuable marks are. Boy, that was a great point in time.
So do you suppose there was like a 5-minute delay in broadcast there, and they had some editors quickly on the spot? You know,
if we freeze it longer, we get more money out of Nike. Yeah,
slow down. Hold put that, the logo on it. There. Holding and done.
That's another thing too, though. I mean, just think, what if it was, I mean, the Nike, the words themselves are recognizable, but what if it was something else? And, you know, we're talking about the icon having something that small on a golf ball. What if it was words that weren't really readable in that case? Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a difference to having that icon to have on the golf ball.
Mm-hmm. When you guys approach logo design, you know, you're obviously thinking multiple mediums, where this thing has to go, the web being one of them. How limited are we still with our color palette on the web versus print?
Not at all anymore.
Are those rules gone now?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the only thing to take into consideration as far as color is whether you want to do, it's more on the print side, if anything, you know, if you want to print one color, two color, three color, four color, and at three mm-hmm. color, you might as well go four color. And, you know, with digital printing the way it is, you know, more and more companies just going four color and not caring anymore. So mm-hmm. it's not a huge budgetary issue, it seems, anymore. That used to be kind of an issue. It'd be, oh gosh, you're designing me a four color logo. Really? I have to do four color, letterhead and business card and all that stuff. And I really haven't run into that as much, anymore than I used to.
Is color for you guys one of the primary considerations when you first design the logo, or do you first say, okay, I want to make this look great in black and white first?
That's typically how I operate. I want to you know, if I'm using an icon, I want to make sure I get this icon that tells a story. Because then I go through a whole color study later on. I probably have some colors in my mind. Client might be particular to some colors too. You know, there's a lot of different little variables that go into play in that. But yeah, most of all, color is farther down the list for me.
Yeah, me too. I would say just basically designing it in black and white and getting that to look good, and then going back, and doing a color study, figuring out, you know, going back with what is their brand, and then kind of getting color ideas from there.
Sadly, I guess I'd actually have to say I work the other way.
Okay, that's good. Why?
Definitely. When I look at the color and I look at the company and kind of see whether it's a company we work with just recently had sort of an old, very old feeling teal that would make it extremely difficult for me to look at a word mark that would have a sans serif or a geographic optical, just because it wouldn't feel like the two colors would jive with the font and the different aesthetic elements that they had or anything that I wanted to do with their brand as a whole. So looking at the color for me is very integral. If it's going to be
this,
orange.
This was a redesign?
This was a redesign of a logo actually that Fish and Shannon worked on here. But that was one of the first things that I saw with that, is that the color was what was going to be holding back the design first. And then
I changed the color.
She did change the color.
I talked him out of it.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of connotations to yellow, to orange, to red that are still resonating. And even just the type of red, I think, can definitely change where you want to go with what could have been something that would have been square and is now hanging out more in the rhombus land.
How many variations of logos do you normally produce? I mean,
at the beginning, a lot. Yeah. I would say just like coming up with so many ideas and just sketching out ideas, going on the computer with ideas, and then from there taking what you like and just narrowing it down to what you want to show to the client, which would, you don't want to show them too many, you know, I would say at the max like 3 ideas that you really like, or 1 idea that you really like and want to recommend.
Yeah, Shannon and I have tried something recently that worked out really well. I'd read it, can't remember what the book was, it was the idea of just cranking out as many ideas as possible in a short amount of time. It was 20 ideas in 20 minutes, and we did that, and it was awesome because you didn't stop and think about anything. You just it was kind of a mind dump, and then we go back and take a look at what we've done and found some interesting avenues and say, oh yeah, I could really see something happening here, and then did the same exercise over again just with those ideas and went from there, and it was it was a really nice process.
And that was all just pen and paper, just quickly scribbling down ideas. And I think when you go straight to the computer, it's a really different way to go. And I usually want to just start out on paper just by sketching ideas and then kind of moving to the computer.
Yeah, going straight to the computer does inhibit the flow, I think, a little bit, because you just all of a sudden set on more of the production mode of things and trying to make everything so perfect where that's... but at the same time, you know, sometimes you can't really achieve a lot of the looks. You might have the idea in your head, but you can't maybe achieve that effect with the pencil and paper. So, you know, kind of sketching on the computer, I guess, sometimes helps as well.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite logos?
I'm a big fan of that new Pepsi push, where it's not going to last longer than 3 years, I guarantee it, but the new Pepsi icon where they sort of turned it on top of its head and it all of a sudden feels much more modern, much more new. They kind of redid the entire brand there, but I'd say out of that whole group, even though Mountain Dew is the only one that's actually holding its own as far as retail sales goes by, I think that's a real classy move, and the word mark that goes with it.
I really like what they did with Mountain Dew.
I
like the abbreviation, the MTNDEW. I just thought that was really cool for some reason. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorites, I'm looking at it on screen right now, is the Apple logo. That's a good case of refreshing over the years. You know, I had the rainbow apple, and then now the more shiny apple. I really like that.
Yep. Classic one of all time is Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about colas. What else we got here on the screen?
That FedEx one on the top. I remember in some class in college, that was a big deal because just the way that they made the arrow with the E and the X, like we had like a whole class on it, and then we had to go out and design something that was like that, you know, because it was just so clever. It's just words, but then when you look at it, there's that arrow at the end that just like, you know, shows what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They deliver.
Northwest Airlines had the same kind of thing where yep. first time you look at it, you're going to see an N in a circle with a compass pointing to the northwest. And then you look at it again, realize that it makes the N into a W.
Mm-hmm.
Folks at home, just so you know, we're looking at a website, top 10 logos of all time. And of course, we'll put the link in the show notes for you so you can look, watch along with us here. Number six on the list currently, it's an ever evolving top 10 list, is Nike. And doing a little research on some before the show here. Any idea who designed that Nike logo? Initially,
if I remember, it was like for $5 on a cocktail napkin.
you're pretty darn close. It was an intern for 35.
Yeah.
And then you know, I think it went through variations before it came out like it did. But
I think a lot of logos, the very well known ones, kind of went that direction too. I think I seem to remember the same sort of story about the Playboy Bunny as well. It was really? Like. Like a $5 logo. I might be mistaken, but that's sticking in my head for some reason.
Probably because of the naked ladies.
Yes.
the word association. The logo association.
Wait, that does seem to help anchor
things in my head. That's a logo?
There's a logo?
But yeah, I remember the WWF had like a four-year-old kid send in a submission of what their logo looked like in crayon, and what ended up being, they thought that just looked absolutely badass.
Yes. That's awesome.
Some examples of maybe not so good design you guys can think of?
Oh, wow. Just drive down the street.
Yeah.
Any grocery store. Absolutely any grocery store.
There's so much more to putting a logo together than people really realize. I mean, you have to have a good grasp on type and, you know, contrast and weight and just how things play together. And you just...
Papyrus.
Yes, that's Shannon's favorite font, papyrus.
My nemesis. Go into the phone book and look at logos. You will see papyrus font used on most of them.
On every ethnic food chain? Is that
yes. Pretty much.
Very true. No, you know, most people know when they see a bad logo, they know it's a bad logo. They just can't put their finger mm-hmm. on why it's a bad logo. Mm-hmm. And that's the exact reason why most companies should not design their own logo, because they have an idea of what they want, but they just can't execute it. So get somebody else to do it for you.
Maybe that's how we end the show today. Get someone else to do it for you.
Yes, we'll gladly do it for you.
Hire the professionals, folks. Well, Eric, Shannon, Nick, thanks again for joining us today. If you have any questions for us here at the podcast, you can send us an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. Audio comments are always welcome, or give us a phone call at 888-9-SUNDOG. That's 888-978-6364. For Eric, Shannon, and Nick, this is Lon Keller, and we'll see you next time on Sundog, the podcast.